Public Radio, this is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Today, we delve into Alabama's prison crisis with WBHM health and science reporter Mary Scott Hodgen. For the past several years, Mary Scott has investigated prison conditions that are being monitored by the Department of Justice. Alabama officials are hoping to avoid a federal takeover. Mary Scott joins us by Skype to preview her new 7-episode podcast called Deliberate Indifference, Inside Alabama's Prison Crisis. Mary Scott, welcome to Troy Public Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have developed a new podcast about a subject that continues to have a lot of confusion surrounding it, Alabama's prison crisis. How did you get interested in this?
So I, back in 2019, was covering mental health care in state prisons. There's a large lawsuit that's been going on for years. It has been known as Bragg versus Dunn. I was covering that, and then in April of 2019, the Department of Justice released the results of its investigation regarding violence among people incarcerated in state prisons. So at that point, I started covering more of what's going on inside state prisons and looking at the Department of Justice's investigation and then what has come since then.
You have developed a podcast called Deliberate Indifference, Inside Alabama's Prison Crisis. Why did you name it Deliberate Indifference?
This is a legal term, deliberate indifference. In the Department of Justice's reports and lawsuit filings, it says that Alabama is deliberately indifferent to the harm that is caused to people inside. So deliberately indifferent to the conditions of violence inside state prisons. And so that's where the name comes from.
You know, when you look at Alabama historically, a lot of this goes back to federal judge Frank M. Johnson. Remember in the early 1970s, ordering Alabama to overhaul its crowded, understaffed mental hospitals. He was also after prison reform. So this is decades in the making.
Yes, absolutely. And we get into that in the second episode, follows what happened back in the 1970s. Judge Frank Johnson's ruling and, you know, what came after that, but also what came before that. So taking a look sort of at the deeper history of the state's prison system since the Civil War, convict leasing. So really a deep dive into that history.
How many episodes of this podcast did you develop as you looked into various aspects of the prisons?
There are 7 episodes in total. I view them as sort of this journey through the crisis, so to speak. So kind of taking you not only inside the prisons, but also just this crisis that we have created over decades. So looking at the history and what has gotten us here and then where we are now. So episodes look at the violence, telling the stories of people who've been killed inside the state's prisons. They also look at the roots of overcrowding and understaffing, which are two of the main issues that the Department of Justice identifies. In addition to that, we look at programming, what kind of rehabilitative options are available inside prison and the shortcomings with that. And then we look at mental health care inside state prisons and then what's next for the state. So it's kind of a look at all of these different issues inside the system and then how the state has been addressing it and what's next.
Can you share an excerpt with us right now?
Yeah, of course. I'll play an excerpt from episode 1. In it, we hear from people inside prison about the impact of the Department of Justice report. So it's detailing what happened after the report came out and the reaction from people inside.
The report was something to grab onto. It put a spotlight on the danger and conditions. The report was also a warning that if state officials didn't do something, the feds might intervene. And for guys on the inside, the report offered some hope. Hassani Jennings is 48 years old. He's been locked up for nearly 30 years, serving life without parole for a capital murder conviction.
We know that change needed to happen, and we felt like it would be a catalyst to make something, you know, happen. So we sit here and we see the problems and we live through the problems, but it's like, you know, it doesn't make a difference. We don't have a voice to cause any positive change. So when the report came out, most guys were excited because, you know, it seemed like it was an opportunity for the public to see and for the public to instigate the change where we didn't have the means to from the inside.
So, Mary Scott, did you actually interview prisoners like this man?
Yes, I did. I interviewed several people inside prison. I also wrote letters and corresponded with a lot of people. And it's a difficult process to communicate with people inside prison because I can't call them. They have to call me through the prison wall phone. And then just finding people was a challenge as well and connecting with them. I did that mainly through letters, so writing letters to people inside state prisons.
It seems in all of these decades that people have been wrestling with the basic question, what is prison for? Is it primarily punishment? Is it also rehabilitation? After you did all of this investigation, what sort of conclusion did you come to?
When you look at what happens inside prison, it's not really serving anybody in terms of helping communities get safer. You know, a lot of times we talk about the impact of violent crime and what we could do to help people who are victimized. You know, when you have a system in which people experience more violence and then they leave and they go back to their communities, oftentimes that doesn't help the communities get safer. I met a lot of people who are doing things to improve that, to make an impact. There are groups, for example, on the reentry side who, you know, offer that support that people need to reenter society and get the resources to reacclimate and get a job and get settled back in. But those efforts are few and far between. I also found in my reporting, which is the lack of communication, connecting people with resources in the free world when they're leaving prison, the need for people to talk, the Department of Corrections, talking with the Bureau of Pardons and Paroles, or connecting with these grassroots organizations on the outside, you know, to connect people inside prison with resources on the outside. Those are certain things that I think have been sparked by this Department of Justice investigation, by, you know, a lot of these lawsuits sparked more conversation about those things, and there has been more of that.
Do you see a roadmap out of this dilemma?
You know, I think that it starts with a mentality, and everybody's going to have a different perspective on punishment and what prisons should be for. What are we okay with as a society when you look at the violence that goes on inside state prisons and some of the trauma that people experience there? That's not benefiting anyone. Think about a more humane approach to justice. And I think that's one thing that people want to see is more investment on the front end to help prevent people from getting in situations that land them in prison to begin with, and then helping people who have already been in the system stay out and not return to prison.
Mary Scott, I want to take a moment to thank you for sharing your research and your investigation with your listeners here at Troy Public Radio.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Joining us by Skype was Mary Scott Hudgen, health and science reporter with WBHM Public Radio. Her new podcast, Deliberate Indifference, Inside Alabama's Prison Crisis, is now available online. More information can be found at the website, deliberateindifference.org. Thanks for joining us today for In Focus, which is now a podcast on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.